It is one of the most exciting times on the schedule, not only for Major League Baseball, but for the entire sports world. It is the MLB trade deadline, and here locally in Chicago, we have two teams going in separate directions, but both interesting nonetheless. And with the few weeks left heading into this scouting period, this research period, as Theo Epstein has mentioned, we are seeing some trades go down, and we're going to break that down along with so philosophy. We're going to go into the classroom with Professor Paul Chavarri, and we're going to have a conversation about the mindset of some of these trades, what teams are looking for, how fan bases think about it, and the actual real-life scenarios and logistics and follow-up from these trades here on the Sports Cubicle with the Marvelous One, Dan Marver, Devin Tingle, Paul Chavarri. I'm Mike Mercado. And, Paul, before we get to this classroom education you have for us, Oppenheimer, let me ask you about this White Sox trade. So the Cubs come back. They win these two games against the White Sox after this recording. Currently, they're going to be in hot St. Louis, trying to continue on their momentum.
So ideally, the Cubs will probably win the series this weekend against St. Louis.
They better. Yeah. They need to if they want to continue on and be
3 out of 4. If not, I mean, a split would be bad, but the Cardinals are imploding.
And they need to have the buyer's mentality. If they want to have the buyer's mentality, you have to beat the teams that you're up against that are, quote unquote, worse than you. And if you see a team imploding like the Cardinals, like we saw on Thursday night, then you better take advantage of it. But, Paulie, there was a trade that happened after the Cubs' comeback, and it kind of started the ball rolling for what I think is a lot of our guesses. One are going to be one of the more active sellers in this trade deadline. The White Sox made a move. This coming after the unicorn, the alien, Shohei Ohtani, is going to be reportedly staying in L.A. for the rest of the season. We're going to talk about that in a second. Talk to me about this trade that the Angels and White Sox made.
So the White Sox, announced probably like half hour after the Cubs-Sox game ended on Wednesday night, the Sox announced, first it was Jeff Passan, but then a minute later the White Sox themselves announced it, which was weird.
They had that, a cool graphic, by the way.
Yeah, with like the CTA.
Yeah, that was actually pretty cool.
It was weird to me, though, that Passan's breaking it, you know, per sources tell ESPN, and then the White Sox, you don't normally see that. Normally you see the writer is way ahead of the team in announcing
it. Very coordinated.
Which makes me wonder, it's just weird, the circumstances around Lucas Giolito. Get to the trade. Yeah. Lucas Giolito and Reynaldo Lopez, two pitchers, both righties, traded to the Angels in exchange for two prospects. That's, according to the MLB pipeline, it was the number 2 and 3 prospects. Edgar Cuero, who's a switch-hitting catcher, and a left-handed pitcher, Kai Bush. They're both currently double-A pitchers. Bush is expected to, I believe, be up either this year or next year, whereas Cuero, I think it's like 2025, is what they're looking at with him. But, you know, we'll see. Maybe next year he's on a roster along with Zavala or whoever. You know, they're probably going to have to carry, Sox catching is not deep.
I know they drafted
a kid out of Ole Miss in one of the earlier rounds this year in the draft. But
they needed help there.
They needed help. So just kind of like just blindly analyzing the trade. Yes, obviously the Angels need pitching. They're not too far out of it. They're only four games out of it. Personally, I think that was kind of, I don't think they're really going to be. There's no way they're going to catch Houston or Texas
in that division.
And the AL East.
Yeah.
No one from the Central is going to be making the wild card. Yeah. So it's a gamble. But I think the gamble is you need to entice Shohei Ohtani to want to re-sign with the team in the offseason. And I think that's a lot of what this move is to at least show him, you know, hey, we can try and create an atmosphere here to make a playoff run. You know, I think Mike Trout is coming back pretty soon off the IL. So the hope, if you're the Angels, is that you can go on a late, hot run and sneak into the playoffs, and then anything happens. You know, once you get into a best-of-three scenario, and you've got Shohei Ohtani as one of your pitchers and Lucas Giolito is the other one, your chances have increased that much more of making it into the next round. As far as the White Sox, yeah, they needed a catcher. Switch-hitting catcher is great. That's always nice to have. Yasmani Grandal is one, whatever your thoughts are about him, he is a switch-hitting catcher that's a fairly good offensive catcher in this league, regardless of what the numbers would tell you. And they needed a left-handed pitcher. They were very light in both of those departments, and I think that was probably the best deal they could have gotten from any team. Even though it's a weak farm system, I think it was like the 29th ranked farm system, just ahead of, I think, the White Sox in MLB pipeline. So, it's a gamble. It's always a gamble when you do these types of things. But let's remember that Bob Nightingale from USA Today reported earlier this year that the White Sox were looking to move Lucas Giolito before the end of the season, or they weren't going to bring him back next season. I forgot the exact wording, but it was essentially, which was very weird that you know, we know Nightingale's normally a mouthpiece for the team. It was very weird to see early in the season that Nightingale's reporting that the Sox are moving on from Giolito. So that, of course, made him tradable on the market. I don't know if the Sox lost any leverage in any trades that way, but I think it worked out the way it was going to work out. I think he was going to head to the West Coast, and I think the Sox needed to address left-handed pitching and catching.
And you'll obviously be updating us throughout the rest of the weekend if something else breaks, whether it's Lance Lynn, as of this recording, Dylan Cease, Tim Anderson. I mean, I don't think either one of us believe Dylan
Cease. I have a feeling
that
nothing's going to happen,
okay,
though.
Okay,
I mean, that's like my instincts tell me that neither team, you know, because we were talking before we got on the air about where the Cubs are at. Are they buyers or sellers?
Which I want to get to that in a second.
I think the worst mindset to have, though, is it's either or. I think sometimes with the Cubs are in a position where it's like, well, maybe you just stand pat.
What do you think about
what cost, you know?
What do you think? We've volleyballed this back and forth, the idea of trading Stroman, keeping Bellinger, and hoping to re-sign Bellinger, even though he's a Boris agent. The idea of trying to dip your toe and stay dry at the same time, have your cake and eat it too, of, look, we know that this Cubs rotation is pretty good. They have a decently ranked farm system with some pitching prospects. But the idea being, you're more comfortable getting your first baseman, center fielder, DH, paid for now at 28 years old on a four-year deal than you are giving Marcus Stroman at 30 years old a three-, four-year deal. Do you think a world like that can exist where teams like the Angels and the Cubs can make decisions like that? I feel like the Angels have gone all in, right? Like, they're going to put all their chips on the table and we're going to try to make a run on this. Can a team like the Cubs or any of these other teams hovering at that wild card, what is the mindset of some of these teams to play the razor-thin line of being sellers, being buyers, being cognizant about this and being conservative and progressive at certain moments?
The Cubs have a lot of pitching depth in the farm system, and they have like a lot of outfielding depth in the farm system. So specifically to those two players, I guess, you know, they could let them go in free agency and something will be there for them. But I think it's telling that Stroman wants to stay with the team, has been with the team long enough where you'd think that they'd thrown a contract in his direction. And I think he was claiming a few weeks ago that nothing has happened from his agents and the team. Bellinger hasn't been there long enough, and Bellinger was always going to be the experiment of, well, if he's great this year, that's, you know, we can go and trade him at the deadline. If he's not great, well, we took a flyer for cheap on this guy compared to what he was. But Bellinger is showing flashes of the 2019 MVP season. So it's a weird scenario right now where do you hold on to these guys and make a run, or do you try and cut your losses? Well, not even cut your losses. Do you I don't want to say white flags. This isn't as bad as the White Sox in 97.
You cash it on your investment.
Yeah.
You cash it on your investment.
Yeah. And at the same time, I think the Cubs are set up where if they lose these guys without getting anything back, they're not in a position where they're that bad. You know, they've set themselves up with enough depth and enough capital to go out and get a Shohei Ohtani or you know, any free agent really that they want. But they need to, I guess in my opinion, I don't think the Cubs are making the playoffs. Mm-hmm. I think that in August, reality is going to sink in. I think they've been beating up on weaker teams the last few weeks, and that's why they've turned themselves into quote-unquote buyers at the deadline, when a month ago it was, well, they're going to sell, and they got Stroman and Bellinger. You know, so now they have tough decisions to make. And I think we don't know what the clubhouse culture is, and if you trade a guy like Stroman, is that really going to send the message to the players that, hey, we don't believe in you? And then is that going to send a message to the fan base like, oh, you know, I know you guys have been riding these guys all summer, but, you know, we don't think they're going to be good. So they're in a really tough position right now. Personally, though, I think, yeah, you're right. Trade Stroman, keep Bellinger, throw a contract at Bellinger and see if you can try and get him for decent money and build around that. You know, he's essentially the Chris Bryant that you didn't get when Chris Bryant became a free agent. You know, it's a guy that can play multiple positions and can rake. And actually has better health, though, than Bryant.
All right, we are here back in the professor's classroom. We are at Sports Cubicle University. Professor Paulie, you and I have differential opinions on the Cubs' run as of late. I think the universal fact with the period at the end of it is they played a weak schedule. They've taken advantage of it. I believe in baseball, it's kind of hard to do that because some teams, you're playing them with the guys on the IL. Sometimes the guys on a cold streak.
When you catch a team.
All that being said, though, right? the mentality of buying and selling with now a second wild card, and how fan bases and farm systems and momentum and contracts all go into this one little weekend coming up in the beginning of August, end of July. In your mind, the difference between the Angels and the Cubs, obviously them having a unicorn in Shohei, but Cody Bellinger being the next big bat in the free agent market, the guy that people are targeting, especially a left-handed bat, former MVP. What is the, in your mind, I can tell you why I think the Cubs, if you're in it, you're in it, you got to be buyers.
Yeah.
Or you could be conservative buyers, progressive sellers, whatever. But
I think they could
being,
stand pat.
You know,
What needs do you think they need to fill?
They need a more consistent third baseman to help Morel, so you have a little bit more of a platoon there.
Then where do you put Morel?
You find your at-bats anywhere. You make sure you don't overdo Cody Bellinger. You make sure that you have him on the outfield. You have a DH. Like, you also don't need to be playing Mastroboni and Tauchman as much as you have been. Like, there is room out there for a lot of these guys. But, point taken, you don't have to do any of that. But you can stay pat. My question to the professor for the classroom is, in your mind, where is the line? Where is the difference between being a buyer and a seller? Where is it? Is it record? What if you can find the advanced analytics, these numbers, and say we're playing under our potential, but we have a feeling we can get back to it?
Well, you were using the Angels and the Cubs as a comparison, and I don't know their records offhand, but I'd imagine they're similar. You know, they've got to be like...
So this recording, the Cubs are at 500 at 51.
And the Angels
51,
are sub 500.
And the Angels are 54 and 49.
Oh, they're above 500.
Yeah, the Padres are under 500.
That's right. Okay, yeah. But the Angels are trailing the leaders of their division way more than the Cubs are.
60 wins for the Rangers and 58 for the Astros as of this recording.
It's not even just your own division sometimes. The division is great because, like, you win the division, you make the playoffs.
Yeah, name the AL,
but then
East.
Look at the American League East.
The
exactly.
Yankees
like
54 and 48
and
are in last
something
place.
I was trying to bring up to you off the air, that, you know, the last good team that the Cubs have played was fourth place in a division.
Does that now? Let me ask you that. I mean,
you know what I'm saying. You know what I'm saying, though.
It's
like, but if I just said, like, you know, like, you know, that, okay, that's you know,
it's a variable. It's part of the equation.
It's a variable. You know,
yeah,
I know
sure.
the Cubs did well against the first place team in that very same division when they came to town.
Can
you know, so it's when you catch certain teams. You know, and then. Didn't they lose 2 out of 3 to the Yankees, or did they win 2 out of 3 against the Yankee in Yankee Stadium? I know it was just a few weeks ago, but it just gives you an idea of, okay, so to answer your question, I think you have to look at what your playoff picture looks like. And in the National League, it looks a little bit more winnable than or attainable than the American League. You know, we know with the American League Central that the winner of the division will be the only representative from that division. With the National League Central, probably the same thing, but at the same time, there might be a team that sneaks in at second place and gets in there. Yeah. And I want to say last year there were two representatives. No, maybe one. It was the Cardinals alone.
Yeah, I think it was the Cardinals alone.
Yeah, Cardinals alone last year.
But there's been years where it's been Cubs,
Milwaukee slipped at the end or whatever. Yeah, and it's that close. I mean, it really comes down to the wire. And I think if I remember correctly, though, the Cubs have a hard last week because they'll play Milwaukee and I think Atlanta in the last week of the season on the road. So, I mean, it might come down to those final six games for the Cubs. Long story short, I think, yeah, you look at your playoff picture.
Cubs took 2 of 3 from the Yankees.
From the Yankees, okay.
In New York.
Yeah, in New York, yeah.
And that was coming off of splitting with the Brewers.
Okay.
So they're 500.
How did they do against the Blue Jays this year? Did they play them yet?
I don't remember a Blue Jay series. They took the series against Baltimore.
See, that's
impressive.
They
took the series against Tampa Bay.
Yeah.
So, like,
and that's impressive.
They've played and they took the series against Houston.
But that was also a while ago. You know, what Cubs team was that? What Rays team was that? What Orioles? And I know at the time the Orioles were hot, so it's like that was a big win.
What is it, Professor, when we're talking about, like, sport, because this is definitely fodder for just sports fans and sports media, like the schedule, because you can't control it, and you're playing a day, especially baseball, you're playing it day by day, literally. But how do we analyze scheduling the same way we do? Like, the NFL is so easy for us.
Yeah.
It's like we know we can do it in pockets of 4-4, 4-4.
But
like,
think of how many trap games there are. You know, you look
even
at
then, yeah.
You know, you look at NFL. I don't know. I mean, I think everyone in August of an NFL schedule says, you know, like, oh, well, that team's going to be this.
Teams.
And then you see, I mean, we talked about this last year with, you know, off the air about the Raiders, how, like, Raiders are 6-11. They suck. Well, aside from one game, they were within a touchdown of all of those games.
So let me ask you this. Okay. We talked about
it could go either way.
For sure.
So
the plus minuses.
Yeah.
But the plus minuses, you and I have talked about it for a little while. This is where I think I'm a little bit more bullish, besides being a Cub fan, but being a little bit more bullish on the Cubs, even in Vegas and in any sports wagers where I had them over 500, not only the division, but I think there is something to these matchups and the way this roster was kind of put together that makes me more, I believe a little bit more in watching the run differential. So we're watching like the
only
Oakland
team
Raiders,
positive, yeah,
the Vegas Raiders, where it's like a lot of these games were one possession games.
Mm-hmm.
That's a tale of a lot of teams in the NFL where the difference is just one possession, and it's the little factors that equal a 6 points, it's, 3 points.
I don't read too much into run differential because you know how many of those games were blowouts.
So
you know,
I'm so, glad so you I guess the thing is there is a stat for that.
So,
now,
so okay, so how many times have the Cubs been blown out versus other
sure.
teams? You know, because that might be a factor too. You know, the Reds were pretty poor at the start of the season, but now they're a better team than they were in April. The Pirates were a great team to start the season, but now have come back down to earth. The Cubs, the positive run differential says to me, okay, they're consistent, they're good, but how many times do they like beat up on someone and inflate that number? Because and then, of course, in the reverse of that, they're competitive enough where they're not getting blown out by teams. I don't read too much into run differential.
Just as a reference, somebody did go in and there's, I can't find the reference right now, but I have the number. So the Cubs' run differential was plus 48.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's the only positive one in the Central.
So the thing that this number does is they take away your blowouts.
Yeah.
Cubs are plus 36.
Okay.
So even with the two blowout, the real big games, the two blowout games against
the
A's.
Which that tells me if they're the only team at this point in the year in their division with a positive run differential and like not hovering near zero, it says to me they don't get blown out a lot, but they have blown out a couple of teams.
Yeah.
But they're consistently good. They're consistently winners. That's great for a 500 team, considering they're sitting below two teams that are above 500 with a negative run differential.
And I guess that's where the question to the classroom, and we'll ask everybody on Twitter at SportsCubicleTV, and you and I have been talking about it for years, is what defines a buyer and a seller with a two wild card league now?
It's situational.
Like
it's
total it
situational.
Yeah.
And I think I was saying 2 months ago, if the Sox went on a good run, they'd be buyers, but they didn't go on that good run. Automatically sellers. That's easy. And it's like, you know, I think they're now 12 back in the American League Central, something like that. You know, like if they didn't
13
have...
13 as of this recording.
Yeah. Yeah. If they didn't have such a pitiful July...
That's what it was.
There probably would be people saying like, no, they got to go all in. They got to do. And with what? I don't know. Would you trade your only good prospect, Colson Montgomery, to get whatever they need? You know, that's a whole different thing. We know how much of a mess the White Sox were. But I think there is that delusion. I think with the Angels, that's a team that I look at and say they're delusional. But at the same time, they have the unique situation where they have to entertain Shohei Ohtani, and they already have more than a foot in the door, which is more than any teams can say right
now. That's a great point, that they already are at the table.
They have to audition 100%. Right now for Shohei Ohtani and show them that they can put a team around him and win.
But I will say that they are a Shaq with a Bugatti and a Lamborghini on it.
Okay.
So it's like, cool, you have a Lambo and you have a Bugatti.
Yeah.
But the house is leaking, and you gotta go to the porta potty to use the bathroom. And there's chipmunks.
I think like a shack, like let's say like an old building that's gone into disrepair.
Sure, fair
because
enough.
You know, like this is a team that spent gobs of money on Albert Pujols, even though that was a dumb deal, and you saw how much that set them backwards. They spent gobs of money on Anthony Rendon, and that set them back. They never really invested in pitching, so I think it's that. But I think now that they're starting to clear away some of that money, the Angels, in theory, if they keep Ohtani and Trout, could build around them. Or maybe they could trade Trout and get some guys to supplement that.
Let me ask you
this.
We
know they have money. We know Artie Moreno has money.
Moreno has money. Like, we know that nobody wanted to be the owner that got rid of Shohei or the GM that got rid of Shohei.
Yep.
They want to have an opportunity. I know you could have probably got a King's ransom, but to be fair to these teams,
I don't think so, though. I really don't. I really don't think.
Because,
like, even your best farm system, you know, like, you remember hearing about what the Sox were willing to give up for Ohtani, and I think 9 times out of 10, teams would take that trade if it wasn't Shohei Ohtani on the other end of that.
Exactly. And it's right on there. It's like, you can't be the person that trades him.
Yeah.
We all want him. Yeah. Every fan base wants him, but you can't be the GM and the owner that trades him.
They'll be vilified forever. You'll lose a fan base.
Even if it was a smart decision.
Yeah.
Even if it was the best decision.
Even if you win the World Series
couldn't.
In 4 years.
With that in mind, really fast, can you tell me why you would have and then why you wouldn't have traded Shohei Ohtani?
I would have because I think you could have gotten, in theory, you could have gotten a lot of great players for him. But at the same time, I don't think that any team out there has that many great prospects that are willing to part with those prospects to get one player in Shohei Ohtani. And I wouldn't get rid of him because he's Shohei Ohtani and he's a once-in-a-generation talent. And literally just on Thursday, he became the first player ever in the major leagues to pitch a complete game shutout in one end of a doubleheader and homer in another end of a doubleheader. So there you go. He's a unicorn. That's why he is the unicorn.
All right, Professor, before you let us out for the weekend, I have one more Shohei Chicago thing. Okay. I need you to answer these questions so we could put them on the study guide. Can the Cubs legitimately sign Shohei Ohtani next season?
I think so. I think Angels, Dodgers, Cubs are probably my three favorites right now to land him. And why not the Mets or the Yankees? Well, one, I don't think he wants to go to the Yankees. I think he's said it as much. And, you know, I think it's just a giant distraction being a Yankee. There's all that pressure put on you. And not the Mets because they're financially a mess because their owner thought he could buy whatever he wants, including the championship. And now you're starting to see that he's regretting that. But I think the Mets will make a run for him. I just don't think Ohtani wants that smoke.
That's interesting. You and I have not talked about this. As all the conversations we ever have, the thousands of hours we talk about outside of here.
I think I mentioned it to someone here that I thought that the Cubs were a legitimate contender. I think that's why they're setting themselves up this way.
And it's interesting that you named those three teams because that's exactly my list in that order are the Angels, Dodgers, and Cubs.
Yeah.
I think the Cubs have always been the dark horse.
Angels are the incumbent.
Yes.
Dodgers have the money in the capital, yeah. And they're right there, and he's familiar with the West Coast. And then the Cubs, because I think they've been setting themselves up for this quietly this entire time.
Percentage-wise, I think the Cubs have about a 20% chance of signing him.
I think there might be a sleeper team in there somewhere.
Yeah, I think the Braves are the sleeper team. That's been my fourth team.
Interesting. Yeah, okay. I think the Rangers could be a sleeper team. You know, everyone said the Mariners because they have great relationship
like
with Japanese
Seattle.
Players.
I like Seattle.
You know, in the proximity to Japan, yeah. You know, on the West Coast. But
him and J-Rod would be sexy for baseball fans. That would be very,
it'd be a
very
start.
Beautiful.
Yeah, I mean, the Mariners are a long way away.
But I got about 20%. Where are you at?
What, for the Cubs?
Cubbies, yeah.
Oh, I think more than that. I think,
oh, really?
Like,
interesting.
Yeah, 25 to 50,
okay,
somewhere in there.
Okay, that's a pretty
yeah,
big number. 25, 30, that's...
Yeah.
That's
I'd say, like, let's split it evenly. 33, 33,
okay.
33.
Interesting.
With the small extra third going to the...
A little bit more bullish than me on that one. Yeah. That's surprising.
Or the 1%, the 34% going to the Angels.
For
there
sure.
You go. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. I think the Angels are definitely the favorite.
Just because they're the incumbent.
Yeah, yeah. But, like, don't... Yeah, yeah.
Go let you know, you know?
Yeah, yeah, for sure. I guess last one, if... The Cubs, or in this case, the Dodgers. I mean, we'll see what the Angels, they're in the race, but Seattle. Do these teams in 2024 become World Series contenders / perhaps favorites? And I'm mostly talking about our friends over on Clark and Addison. If they sign Shohei, knowing what you know now, putting all the factors into it, from farm system to ownership, if they bring in Shohei through free agency, do they become World Series contenders?
Maybe.
Interesting.
I wouldn't say a hard no, but I wouldn't say a hard yes either.
I'm with you on that, yeah.
I think just because there might be other question marks left to answer, you know, and they don't look like a murderer's row. But at the same time, you know, sometimes you just got to get hot at the right time. Sometimes, you know, you supplement players. You know, I think back to someone would have laughed at you last 4th of July a year ago if you would have said the Phillies will be the National League champions. You would have been laughed at.
A few years before that with Atlanta.
Yep. Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah. The run, yeah.
Yeah.
Now, at the same time, going into the season,
sure,
if you would have said those teams, I think people would have been like, yeah, you're right.
Sure.
But then, they,
yeah,
you know, it's 162 games.
Talk
so
about all
much
the time
can happen in that time. You know, you know, here I'm saying the Cubs won't make the playoffs, but you never know. They get hot in August, then you got to ride with them, you know?
Let's make our official prediction. I think it comes down to Cubs, Brewers. I think Cincinnati comes down for one reason. All their absolutely amazing, jealous-inducing superstars that they have coming up, and they are going to be problems for St. Louis, Chicago, Pittsburgh, and Milwaukee for years to come.
Mm-hmm.
The last 2 weeks will come down to Milwaukee and Chicago for the first and second place of that division.
And they play each other that last week.
And there will only be one Central team coming out into the playoffs. So my official prediction, just because I put money on it and our friends over at DraftKings, and of course when I went to beautiful Las Vegas, I'm going to put money on the Cubs. But man, I think the last week of the season comes down to Milwaukee, Chicago. So if you're asking for, like, that means I think the Brewers are going to stay at first place, and it's up to the Cubs to overtake Milwaukee. I think Cincinnati is just going to tire down. They're going to go through the league. They're going to be a problem. There'd be a problem.
See, and I think Cincinnati's going to come out on top. So I think it's going to be a dog fight all the way to the end.
You know? And is it those three teams?
Pittsburgh and St. Louis won't be in the mix, but they can play spoiler if there's
100%.
Games.
100%.
You know? Especially Pittsburgh. St. Louis, I think, is going to run through the motions.
This is it for them.
Like, I can't remember the last time St. Louis has been this bad.
Yeah.
And I think they're going to run through the motions down the stretch here.
Sure.
But I think Pittsburgh is still one of those teams that could really be sneaky and really upset some teams.
They got
teams.
Talent. It's not like they don't have
talent. I think Cincinnati has, they can stay hot.
So
then I think that's the team we're looking at that could win the division.
Do they have the pitching to maintain that amazing group of young studs it has to do what we're talking about?
No, I mean, not playoff quality pitching, but NL Central quality pitching.
Okay. Great. Professor, this is the last question. Cubs make the playoffs. And, you know, I don't think they have as good a team as any of these playoff teams. But do you like, if they keep Stroman or even if they trade him, the rotation of a Justin Steele, Marcus Stroman or Drew Smyly with like Kyle Hendricks and
Tyone, maybe.
And then the bullpen, whatever the residuals are.
Absolutely, yeah.
Like, do you think that's a legitimate rotation?
To get two quick wins, I think Stroman and Steele are great to go with. You know, and then let's not discount Hendricks's, you know, playoff experience. And, you know, even though it's like, you know, some guys can tee off on that pitching sometimes. Yeah. But if he's clicking, you know, he can really do some damage.
I think that's the only hope. Cub fans, because you can hope for this hot offense and these guys that come and go, but that pitching rotation is the only legitimate argument. If you say, can the Cubs win one series? Like, they have the rotation, they steal a game away, and all of a sudden you're going against X, Y, and Z on that rotation. It's a good rotation. It's not a murder's rotation.
Starting pitching is a great thing to have going into a series, but I've also seen teams with great starting pitches just like completely fall apart in the playoffs. I don't think the Cubs are making the playoffs, but at the same time, you got to like their chances.
Yeah.
If they stand pat through the trade deadline, I don't think that's dumb. You know, and I think they're in a unique position because of the last month that, you know, you get to make a decision. You know, I hate that it's buyer or seller. I think it's buyer or seller or stand pat, and the Cubs found themselves in a unique position where they should stand pat, because I don't know what they can realistically buy for without sacrificing too much.
You're buying, if you're staying pat because you want to keep this court and you want to make somewhat of a run, it's just things to bridge and to make it like a legitimate, again, it's third base and bullpen.
I think throwing a long-term contract at either Stroman and or Bellinger,
that's the
answer. More so Bellinger, I think is really what the bigger surprise would be, or the bigger get would be, versus acquiring someone at the trade deadline like a rental.
I mean, it's like finding $20 in your pockets if Cody Bellinger is Cody Bellinger.
Mm-hmm.
That's some fascinating stuff. But this is why it's the toughest course. It's course 300 here at Sports Cubicle University. He is the most profound professor we have.
Or strike while the iron's hot and trade Morrell. See what you can get for him
now. That's a fascinating one. I keep saying the name Pecro Armstrong. As much as I'm high on Pecro Armstrong.
Your best prospect.
Why not?
Brennan Davis or someone. You know, like, I mean, strike while the iron's hot. You know, if you can get a guy under control for more than this season,
thing,
don't do it for a rental. Do it for a guy that you think will help you in 2024 and beyond.
Which is why all of our content next December all the way to February will be Shohei Ohtani, because that is going to be a circus, and I am all here for it. But thank you so much, Professor, for letting us come in and taking us to Oppenheimer so we could see how the person you learned under when you're scorching earth with me behind the scenes when I'm talking about Cubs and being a big meatball. With that, we want to make sure everybody's following us all over the universe. We're on Twitter at Sports Cubicle TV. Check us out on WCBT. Scroll all the way down. Join the newsletter, and you get a chance to win Riot Fest tickets. We'll be there, so make sure you join us so we can hear a bunch of awesome bands and dance like a bunch of fools that are just vibing with the music. And speaking of vibing, go to Sheets and Giggles, 50% off your next purchase by using the promo code THESPORTSCUBICLE. Sports from the couch. You will feel like a big-time free agent. You will feel silky smooth like the swing of Shohei Ohtani. That's Sheets and Giggles, the Sports Cubicle, sports from the couch. 15% off. For the marvelous one, Dan Marver. For Devin Tingle. For Professor Paulie Dangerous, Paul Shavari, I'm Mike Mercado.